This is the Monadnock Summer Lyceum, hosted by the Peterborough Unitarian Universalist Church, located in Peterborough, New Hampshire, and broadcast on New Hampshire Public Radio. We have time for some questions from the audience. While the ushers are collecting those questions written on the yellow cards, let me begin by asking this. Do you think it will eventually be possible to edit the genomes of future generations of human beings? And if so, what moral problems do you foresee?
That's a very large question. So I will just defer a bit by noting that all discussion on that issue to date assumes that future humans will be edited the way we edit animals, that is, by injecting CRISPR into embryos. But that is actually not possible. And the reason is, sometimes the cell divides, it replicates its genome, and only one of those copies gets edited. And the way that we check to see if the genome is the way we want it on an embryo is we grow it to the 64 cell stage, pluck a cell off, and sequence its genome. But if the DNA in different cells in that embryo is different across different cells, you can never know what change you've made. So the only way that we would be able to use CRISPR on humans in anything approaching an ethical manner, if it's ethical at all, is by editing the cells before they become an embryo, that is, editing the cells that become sperm or eggs. And those technologies have not even begun to be developed in humans, and so we have some time to keep an eye on it. And I think we should keep an eye on it. But right now, that's a little bit premature. And I gotta say that at the rate of current technological advance, I would be a little bit more worried about things like mind-machine interfaces, you know, direct neural connections. There's a lot of commercial incentives in that direction. That's a potential route to enhancement that is far more immediate. And similarly, of course, there's all the possibility of artificial intelligence actually bearing fruit after a very long time. And either of those are probably more likely to change the future than directly editing future generations of humans the slow genomic way.
Well, that's a relief, I guess. And now for some questions from the audience. You regularly used we in this talk, as in we need to change science. What can those not involved in the scientific world do to promote ethical choices in science?
That is a great question, and it's one that I struggle with. But my best answer is speak out. That is, write letters to the editor, contact your local university, write to just the department chair of your university doing research that you think is important or relevant one way or another. If you just see something in the news, write to the scientists involved. Let them know of your concerns. I regularly get emails from people saying, you know, I'm really worried about what you're doing for one reason or another. Usually they're concerned about the implications of editing the natural world. And I think it's very important that I receive and read such correspondence. So I invite you, keep an eye on the science and technology section of the news. It's a tiny fraction of your newsfeed, I'm sure. It's not the biggest section of the paper, but read it and correspond and speak out, because those voices do actually matter. They matter directly in terms of influencing us. Feel free. You can Google the email of just about any scientist pretty easily. And if you encourage institutions to reward scientists who are thinking about consequences, then you'll have more scientists in a position to be able to take stock and maybe think before they run an experiment.
Here's a question that I suspect is on the minds of many of us. What are the downstream effects on predators who eat genetically modified mice?
That's a great question. And the answer is, based on everything we currently know, it should be nothing, because what we're doing is encoding pre-existing antibodies into the mice. That is, all mice have antibodies already, the same structure. There's a handful of amino acid changes towards the tips that govern binding, and those exact ones would have been present in some mice anyway. So we wouldn't expect there to be any, because predators eat things producing antibodies, including mice that have those antibodies all the time. So based on everything we know, there should be none. That is, mice against ticks is an extremely low-risk project. But again, complex, open system that we don't understand. So there is no way to know for sure without feeding these mice to a bunch of predators and trying it. And if you want to look for very complex interactions and effects, then you need to do it in the wild in a natural ecosystem, which is thus the small, mostly uninhabited island before you would try it anywhere populated.
Yeah. Okay. The audience seems to be good at imagining moral dilemmas for you to try to solve.
Oh, great.
If we save millions of lives by eradicating malaria, what about overpopulation? Can we think our way out of that problem?
Fortunately, the cultural incentives do seem to favor smaller family sizes once you get people to a sufficient level of security and development. We have abundant data showing that this is true. It's not necessarily true for every culture, but it doesn't need to be true for every culture because we need to concern ourselves, you know, even me who says we should always think about the future. You know, there's the great law of the Haudenosaunee, or the founding law of the Iroquois Confederation, says you should consider the import of your actions unto the seventh generation. Seven generations, given the rate of technological advance, is a very long time. You know, you're looking at 175, 200 years now. That's a very, very long time. So I don't think we can reasonably project further out than that. And I am not terribly worried about a subset of cultures that don't obey that. Don't get me wrong, overpopulation is like climate change. It makes everything harder. You know, it is the reason why we can't sustain our current level. So it is important, but to say that we should allow innocent children to continue to die of a disease that we could prevent because we're worried that they might have children themselves someday just doesn't seem like the right course of action. Rather, I would say we should invest more in helping people, in educating women in particular, which is the single most effective thing we can do to control populations. There's tremendous evidence in that regard.
I'm afraid we have time for just one more question. But it's a key one. Who should judge which outcomes are ethically desirable?
Ooh, here you're drawing me into this morass of politics. So there's a lot of different ethical frameworks, and they all sort of punt on that question one way or another. That is, you can think about ethics in terms of deontology. So deontology is rules-based ethics, sort of systems of general do's and don'ts. There's Aristotle's virtue ethics. What are the tenets of a good person? What makes a good person? And attempting to follow those course of actions that are consistent with your notion of a virtuous person. And then there's consequentialism, which says, let's look at the consequences and see. And when we sort of try to adopt a shared moral discourse, people tend to default towards consequentialism, just risks and benefits. But they all sort of punt on what is the goal here. That is, even consequentialism says, should we value reducing suffering or promoting joy? And even if you can agree on that, you know, what about freedom or justice or all of the other things that we value? How do you weigh those off against each other? People have different opinions. Then there's also the question of risk tolerance. How much are you willing to gamble on being able to fly free of this dilemma to ensure that there is a possible future with a mind-boggling number of beings experiencing what the Greeks might have termed eudaimonia, the sort of ultimate human good, doing art and expression and finding themselves for, you know, what to our standpoint would seem like forever. So I guess I've been talking a lot in order to avoid providing an answer other than to say that, look, this is one of the most profound problems that humanity has ever faced, that philosophers have wrestled with since time unknowing. I will point out that the different cultures have certainly found their way to convergent paths. That is, consequentialism, we normally think of John Stuart Mill and Jeremy Bentham and utilitarianism as the Western version, but Mosey and his Moist movement followed something incredibly similar in China more than 1,000 years before. So these systems do seem to converge, and that's why I think there is something to be said for looking at the ethical frameworks of many different cultures. But the other reality is that whatever we might decide, it's probably wrong, because we tend to expand our circle of empathy as we ourselves become more secure. And we like to think of ourselves as having improved our sense of ethics and morals relative to past generations. And we hope, I think, that our children will continue that process, that our children will be more moral than we are. And a key question then is, what does that mean, given that we are ourselves fumbling towards getting there? But whatever we decide in terms of changing ourselves or creating other beings to help, that is the profound question. Especially now that we can consider changing ourselves and building tools that change the ways that we interact, that we can cooperate and compete, those are fundamentally moral questions. Those are the questions that morality evolved to solve. And we need to be careful about the possibility of making it easier to be moral in particular ways. But at the same time, I think it's a question that we should consider carefully, because if you consider a thought experiment, suppose that everyone in the world has a button on their phone in a submenu that is marked very clearly with, if you push this button, the world ends. How long is it going to be before someone presses that button? Probably out of sheer accident, right? If that's where we're going, if you imagine technology continuing to progress until we ascend higher and higher in the tree, tasting more and more fruits, eventually you may well get to that point. Anyone has the power to do anything, including to other people. And that clearly is not sustainable unless we change ourselves, learn to be more moral, learn to not allow ourselves to make those mistakes. And that's a hard question, because in a way, that's denying ourselves and our descendants freedom. But as they say, your freedom to swing your fist stops where my nose begins. And that's really what this is all about. So that's a very hard question, and I would welcome your wisdom on it.